I invite you this morning to open your Bibles to Luke 17. That's where we will spend the bulk of our time this morning. Jesus was on his way south to Jerusalem. He came from Capernaum, as near as I could determine, fairly far up in the north of Israel. The most direct route to get to Jerusalem led straight through Samaria. Without going into details, Jews and Samaritans did not see eye to eye. In fact, no matter how much time the direct route saved, the Jews generally preferred to make a large detour around Samaria rather than step one foot inside. This was not how Jesus operated. We know that he deliberately went to Samaria to minister to the woman at the well. This time, however, he was in the process of making his way around Samaria. He was in the border region of Galilee and Samaria, near a small unnamed village on the Galilee side. This was actually his last journey to Jerusalem. There were probably many thoughts going through his head as he contemplated what was about to come upon him. If I had been him, I probably at times would have been very distracted by heavy thoughts. Yet Jesus kept on healing, preaching, and teaching his disciples as well as anyone else who came to listen. On this particular day, he was accosted by a group of 10 men. But this was no ordinary group. Let's read Luke 17, verse 11, and the first part of verse 12. Now on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. As he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. Leprosy, that dreaded disease. It wreaked havoc on the body, but more than that, you were isolated from the community. You were considered physically and ritually unclean, cursed by God. Worse than the disease itself was the idea that people had the disease as punishment from God for some sins that they or their parents had committed. Tough if you couldn't think of any sin in your life or your parents that warranted that kind of punishment. You had to go around shouting, "Unclean," wherever you were close to the general populace. Leprosy sufferers lived in caves with others afflicted in the same way and depended on the mercy of the clean community. Lepers associated with each other but had to cover themselves and keep a distance of at least 150 feet from other people. COVID has taught us that isolation is often worse than the actual disease. Suicides have dramatically increased in COVID times. We know that a greater predictor of longevity than eating all the right foods is community. Lepers were cut away from family, friends, and society at large. These men were desperate. But what could they expect from Jesus? Maybe they had heard of other healed lepers, but what did Jesus do for the same for them? When the ten lepers came to Jesus, they respectfully kept their 150-foot distance and resorted to shouting at him. I asked Dennis, how far is 150 feet? You know, I'm not so good with this kind of thing, so I have to depend on others. And he told me, well, it's about as far as from our house to Craig's driveway. If you know where we live, there's kind of a field between us and where Craig, our son, lives. And I'd have to shout pretty loud. I've done that a few times, but I have to shout pretty loud to catch his attention. So that was quite a ways. Let's finish reading verse 12 and add verse 13. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. It's not clear from this phrase that they really expected healing from him. Was it doubt that caused them to shout, Jesus, Master, have pity on us? I suppose they may have thought that if they didn't get the ultimate prize of healing, Jesus could at least show his mercy through some offering or money or food. I could imagine them saying to each other, wouldn't it be nice if he actually healed us? But if he doesn't, maybe at least he'll provide something to fill our bellies. How did they even know it was Jesus? Undoubtedly, somebody must have informed them that he was in the area. Beyond that, he was probably a distinctive figure with the 12 always trailing him. So I'm pretty sure they had no trouble singling him out. Jesus now responds to them in kind of a strange way. Verse 14 tells us that when he saw them, he said, go show yourselves to the priests. I wonder what they thought. They asked for healing and were told to go show themselves to the priests. Did he want confirmation from the priests that they truly were leprous so he wouldn't attempt to heal them of the wrong disease? Didn't they look hideous enough to make it clear what their disease was? Or was he sending them to the priests so that they would give them sustenance? Whatever the lepers might have thought, they obeyed his command and went. Good thing, because they weren't healed until they took that step. Their healing required action. Just like Naaman couldn't be healed unless he dipped in the dirty waters of the Jordan River 7 times, just like the paralytic couldn't be healed without getting up and taking up his bed, so these men couldn't be healed without starting to walk. The Greek word used here for walking suggests that at the moment they obeyed, they were healed. It is fascinating to see in how many ways Jesus healed people. His healings were not cookie-cutter style, but designed for each afflicted individual. From mud, to take up your bed and walk, to the hem of his garment, Each of the healings he performed was tailor-made for the individual involved. I think Jesus was teaching a lesson in each of these miracles, a lesson applicable to these individuals, and also a lesson for each of us to learn from. But that would be another topic. Now, here are the 10 lepers. Imagine being one of them. Bewildered as you might be, you obey that voice and you start walking. Along the way, you're thinking that if you'll get something at all, it'll be a good day. But you haven't entirely given up hope for healing yet, because although you may just be in the beginning stages of the disease, you know what's coming. You can see your cohorts. Or you might be in the last stages of the disease, horribly disfigured, and think to yourself, I'm the one that needs healing the most. Look at that one there, just a few white patches. But getting healing is probably just a pipe dream. Then one of them looks at the one that was so hideously disfigured and says, Hey, the skin on your forehead, just above your cloth there, it looks pretty good. Take that cloth down from your face and let me see the rest of you. And the other one says, What? No, I look awful. Then, with a slight glimmer of hope, he lowers the cloth away and reads the other's face. Is that revulsion? No. It's pure astonishment. He is truly healed. Then they all look at their hands, feet, and each other's faces. Hey, handsome, they say as they look at their companion. If there had been a woman in the group, they might have said, Wow, you look absolutely beautiful with the smoothest skin I've ever seen. Now it sinks in. We're healed. We're all truly healed. Wow. And they start to do a happy dance till they remember, oh, yeah, we're supposed to show ourselves to the priests. That's what we have to do, or we will never be accepted as clean. And off they race. Forgotten in all the excitement is the one who performed the healing, the one without whom they would go on as before, without any hope. Perhaps when the first rush of excitement is over, they remember. But the urgency to find Jesus to give him thanks then is not nearly as great as the urgency was to find him to get healing. But there is one in the group who was raised in a home where please and thank you was the norm. It wasn't just flowery speech for him. No, he meant it every time he said it. And he said it every time someone did something for him. And this someone now had been Jesus. The man looked back, and there Jesus stood, close to where he had been before. Before him was the village with the priests who could pronounce him clean. But he knew that village and those priests would still be there in the little while it would take to accomplish his errand. Jesus, though, most likely would have moved on if he delayed. Quickly, the man covered the distance back. But he didn't stop at the 150 feet required distance. No, this time he ran all the way up to Jesus, threw himself at his feet, and thanked him. But you know what? As close as he was, he shouted at least as loudly now as when he had shouted for Jesus to have pity on him earlier. Verse 15 says, he praised God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And here comes the punchline. And he was a Samaritan. So far in the story, we have no inkling that this is a mixed group. We know that Jews and Samaritans generally avoided each other at all costs. For these men, it was probably mutual calamity that brought them together. Their need overcame their distaste for each other. It also was natural for them to find each other in this border region. There may have been more than one Samaritan in the group. We don't know, but we do know that he was the only one to give thanks. Jews prided themselves in being the children of God and didn't think anyone else was fit for that description. But this attitude led to arrogance and a feeling of superiority and entitlement. The kids naturally get what the parents have to offer. No thanks needed, right? How does that make you feel as a parent? Not so good? I don't think Jesus felt good either. Listen to his sad words in verse 17. Were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner? I think it pained Jesus to be taken for granted without a word of thanks. It is the Samaritan who acts as the true child of God by recognizing the mercy that has come from Jesus, unmerited and free. The Samaritan recognizes God's faithfulness to him in his mercy and returns that faithfulness in his thanksgiving. The Samaritan truly responds to the heart of God. The Samaritan's thankfulness for his physical healing shows evidence of a deeper spiritual healing that evidently bypassed the other lepers. It is the Samaritan who was truly healed. For the others, Jesus had pity on them because he couldn't stand not to respond to the plea. But to the Samaritan, he said in verse 19, "Rise and go. Your faith has made you well." I think this story shows the spuriousness of the idea that someone who is sick is so because they sinned. All 10 of these men were physically healed, regardless of their spiritual standing. But in being thankful, the Samaritan was also healed spiritually. In the New Testament, Paul mentions thankfulness at least 46 times. In 1 Thessalonians 5, verses 16 to 18, 1 Thessalonians 5, 16 to 18, he tells us, "Rejoice always, pray continually, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus." It should have been easy for the lepers to give thanks. They were just healed. But this verse goes beyond that. Give thanks in all circumstances. How are your circumstances today? Is every area of your life balanced and in order? I think not. We all struggle with this or that. Yet, we are called to be thankful. It's not something that comes naturally. It needs to be practiced. I don't think, even in his happy circumstance, the Samaritan just happened to be thankful. I think it was a spirit he nurtured previous to this incident. This week, we had an amazing yearly opportunity to practice thankfulness. But it's kind of like the kid who is being told, "Go say you're sorry. Go be thankful." It doesn't come that easy. And if we try to force it, it surely feels awkward. Sometimes that is what we're told, though. But honestly, mostly it's about the food, isn't it? Even the stores recognize that they can't make much hay from an attitude of thanksgiving. And so long before Thanksgiving ever rolls around, Santa makes his appearance, and Thanksgiving is muted. Let's be thankful, not just on the day or in the week we're supposed to be, but always, in every circumstance, readily and freely. Today, I want to thank you. Thank you for being my friends. Thank you for being my family. Thank you for praying for me. Thank you for caring for me physically. I have so appreciated you over the years. But even more than that, I want to thank God, who has carried me, cared for me, sustained me, loved me, and gave his only son for me. I cannot fathom all that, but I can say thank you.